This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
Sitting in my hot seat all the way from overseas in South Africa is Charles van der Walt. He is the global head of cybersecurity research at a very large and cool company, Orange Cyber Defense. And it's spelled the American way, Cyber D-E-F-E-N-S-E. So it's orangecyberdefense.com. Charles, welcome.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, as the global head of research, you guys are in many countries. I'm not sure if you're in the US yet, but from South Africa to the UK to Belgium to other places, what are you doing there? Are you a managed service provider? Are you boots on the ground in emergencies? Are you the virtual CISO? What are you doing and who are you doing it for?
We're the full, what's the phrase you guys use? The full enchilada, is that right? We're a full stack company. So we do everything from advisory services, penetration testing, we sell products, we support those products, offer managed services. We've got a very significant cert and several CCERT teams also. So pretty much you name it in cybersecurity, we've probably got a hand in there somewhere.
A lot of companies talk about the digital transformation, but now they're forced into it. And like it or not, they're dealing with a flipped over network. The network used to be the internet, the corporate wide area network, VPNs to get from campus to campus. And now we're looking at most people remote, stretching VPN technology to its limits, identity and access management, so many SaaS apps in the cloud. It seems like we are stretching our corporate capabilities and pressing the limits of the internet itself.
That's exactly right. When we started to examine the impact that COVID would have on security, one of the things we noticed very quickly, as did several others, is that the kinds of changes that we instinctively expected, barrage of new attacks by threat actors somehow focused on the end user, those things turned out to be somewhat insignificant, actually. They were there, but we didn't think that they were game changers. In fact, we have some fascinating data where we can compare attack volumes across different countries correlated with the times and the levels of lockdown in those countries. And actually, one of the things that we noted was that there were fewer attacks where the lockdowns were more stringent and not more. But having said that, and I think you've made this point, what we believe very strongly is that there were some fundamental systemic changes. And you spoke about the digital transformation, you spoke about the move to SaaS. Those are big deals. Our renewed or new dependency on third-party platforms. We're using GoToMeeting now, Zoom, WebEx, whatever it is. That's suddenly mission critical. But I think most importantly and most interestingly for us is two factors. The one is our new dependence, our heightened dependence on secure remote access, whether it's Citrix or a VPN or whatever it is that you're using to get your users to your systems. And that just exploded over that period. And at the same time, there was this real escalation in vulnerabilities and attacks involving those technologies. And the other one, the sort of final systemic issue that I find particularly interesting is the role that the user's home IT suddenly plays, and particularly the user's router. Because in our technology stack, we now have this sort of 1995 technology, the Linux box that sits in the middle of everything and really has significant control over what happens on the user's endpoint, because the user is connected to the internet, obviously via that thing. But it also gets its routes, its DNS, what's allowed, what's not allowed. That's all a function of this 1995 technology that the enterprise has no control over. And we think that's a really substantial shift that changes the threat model in very significant ways.
Wow. I remember Dyn, a big DNS host, was taken down in America when people's home routers, which were running, like you say, the old Linux, were backdoored to put DDoS attacks. So the home routers were pointing at, from their cable providers, they were pointing at Dyn, a major DNS carrier, and that caused them an outage, which then affected Twitter and Spotify. And I heard teenagers were threatening to commit suicide if they didn't get their Twitter and Spotify.
Stormed the Capitol.
Exactly. But what you're saying is very interesting, that we really, even our computers with our i7 chips or whatever the latest chip, the CPU and a lot of memory and our, you know, terabyte home hard drives. I mean, our computers are mostly up to snuff, but the routers that we have in our homes, most people don't go out and buy the highest, fastest, most secure, best router. They get a router that you get for $80 or $100, and that's not a corporate quality router. That's an incredible point. Usually with chips from China and open entry points and Telnet and default passwords, incredible. So what are you seeing because of this?
There's several examples, and you mentioned the Dyn DNS one, but there's several examples of these routers being attacked from the internet. The Mirai botnet is another very good example. VPN filter, which was a apparently nation state campaign at one point that compromised 500,000 of these things across 50 countries, I think. So those kinds of attacks are happening all the time. But I don't actually think that's the key point. I think you made the key point when you spoke about this kind of $80 device, built on open source and hardware that shipped from China. The key point, as far as I'm concerned, is that in your enterprise security stack, you don't control that thing, but that thing controls your user's endpoint, or at least exerts significant influence over the user's endpoint. And there's a real tension, I think, between those two realities that I think we need to be taking into account in our threat models. Now, to be fair, I don't think we've seen this leverage to the extent that is possible. We've seen some examples of, for example, DNS hijacking attacks from compromised home routers, but it hasn't been it's not an in the wild thing yet.
It's amazing though. And if we think about it, and I'm wondering if Orange Cyber Defense is working on this, you recommend things to your clients, you do advisory services, you look for holes, you help them fix holes, you help them get better set for regulatory compliance, like GDPR and others. Are you seeing like desktop as a service or next gen VPN technology around the corner? What's right around the corner that helps deal with this and other related work from home issues?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Desktop as a service is something that intuitively makes a lot of sense to me. And I couldn't tell you why it's not bigger than it is. We have a desktop as a service offering, not within cyber defense, but within our business services division. But on the whole, that doesn't seem to be where the energy is. Where the energy is, in my view, and I'm sure many of your guests will have said this, is in the sort of whole zero trust ideology. And that manifests, I think, across a range of different solutions. First and foremost is the actual, let's call it VPN technology that you deploy. And of course, all the legacy VPN providers are adding features and making adjustments that allow them to move in that direction. Then you have the newer players, the sort of Zscalers and that of this world that are first and foremost zero trust. But more importantly and more powerfully, I think, is the sort of ideology, if you like, behind zero trust. This idea that every interaction, every transaction on a system or service should be authenticated to the user and the endpoint, and then we need to assume breach, that we need to assume that home router is already compromised. I think that gives a whole lot of new energy to a number of solutions domains, including, as you said, identity and access management.
Are you guys working on any white papers around work from home, zero trust? Because it is flipping the whole network upside down. And I've heard about zero trust on the intranet. I've heard about leveraging zero trust related to a small number of remote workers, but not everybody or 50% of the company.
Yeah, we are. We're investing a lot of energy into it at the moment. And there's sort of three bodies of work in my team alone that look at the issue. The first is we did a very substantial, one of those papers that's too long and boring to read, around the mapping between traditional VPN technologies and the actual threats that we think home users are going to face. So we said, what do we think the threat model looks like for a home user? And then let's assess the extent to which that threat model is addressed by traditional technologies. And yeah, we published a lot of data around that issue.
So Charles, you have a research report you want to talk about?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about the issue of home user security, and we've been investing a lot of time trying to understand that. You know, I mentioned previously we looked at the attack patterns there. We looked at the issue of the actual technologies that we use to bring our home users in, and the, you know, the vulnerabilities and attacks around those technologies. And then we started looking at the efficiency or the effectiveness of those technologies relative to what we would consider to be the contemporary threat model. So, you know, we asked the question, what are the things that we think, you know, aside from the obvious, what are the things that we think a home user should be worried about, or what would a home user expect at the office in terms of security that they may not get at home? And then we try to assess, you know, to what extent our sort of contemporary remote access solutions provide that. And you know, what we quickly discovered is that there's this mismatch between what we believe our remote access technology is giving us and what it's actually giving us, which isn't speaking to, you know, vulnerabilities or bugs or underperformance in the technology. It speaks to this fundamental shift that we were talking about earlier. You know, these kind of systemic shifts, and the key factor being the home router and the role that it plays. And then most recently, we've started studying precisely that. And actually, we had a lot of fun imagining that we were an attacker on a home router, and sort of coming up with, you know, crazy things that you could do if you had that kind of influence, even with a remote access technology in place. And I'll give you a couple of examples because I think they're kind of fun. The one is that we use the PXE protocol, you probably know it as boot P, where as a machine boots up, if it's configured to boot from the network, it gets from DHCP the location of its operating system, and it downloads it from there. So, you know, one of the simple things you can do is, in that very, you know, rare circumstance, you could literally have the victim's or the target's machine boot up in an operating system that you control. And then, you know, we built it with a backdoor in there, and then from there, you know, we could ransom, or we could, you know, insert malware or whatever. So that's kind of on the one end of the extreme. The other thing we did is we demonstrated that because the router controls routing, we could instruct, we could reconfigure the PC to redirect traffic outside of the VPN tunnel. So, you know, you set it up so that all traffic goes through your tunneling device, gets encrypted, and pops out in your enterprise. But we could override that configuration using DHCP, and have traffic, for example, that should go to a remote desktop, pop out in our server where we could steal the creds. And the other really fun one, which is a bit hard to explain, is we leverage something called a captive portal. And you'll know a captive portal because it's that thing that irritates you when you're at the airport and you have to, you know, give your credentials and stuff. So VPN technologies make provision for captive portals. And one of the ways that they do it is that they have a proprietary browser that they pop up when they recognize one of these portals. And what the browser does is it creates this little walled garden where you can only talk to the captive portal, and only that browser can talk to the captive portal. And so you can deal with the captive portal, put in your creds, give away your credit card number, whatever it is that you have to do. And then they establish the VPN connection, and then you're allowed to carry on doing whatever you do. It's a great idea. Except, of course, if we control the router, then we also control the content that's displayed in that browser. And basically what we do is we set up a fake profile update. So what happens is you're sitting at home, you start up your VPN, we pretend to be a captive portal, but instead of asking you for your email address, we inject into this proprietary software from the VPN vendor, we inject a thing that says, hey, you know, here's a profile update that you need. You accept it, and as soon as you do, you know, we're popping malware on your machine. We've got a range of those sorts of examples. And basically all of them just serve to illustrate that the influence that the home router has over the behavior of the endpoint pretty much trumps anything that we can lay over that to try and create a secure tunnel. And in the end, it suggests, I think, that we need fresh paradigms, need fresh ways of thinking about it.
That's amazing. And either there's going to be some new software development to harden, you know, old-fashioned routers, because they are running Linux, which can be hardened, or but they're all different. You don't know what all your employees are running, although you could probably scrape MAC address info, maybe build up the database of what your employees are running. But it wouldn't be perfect. The second thing is, maybe it's an opportunity for Cisco and others to say, you know, time for a beefier router in the home. If you're going to be in the corporate network, we want you to Wi-Fi into this router or plug into this router, and maybe bifurcate or splinter net. You know, you've got your home cable connection, and it is what it is, and it's poor hygiene. And then you've got this hardened router environment so that you're safely connecting to work, and work is feeling a little bit better about your captive portal experience, that you're not on a DDoS network like Mirai, you know, botnet code.
Yeah,
it's going to open new doors for cybersecurity companies.
Precisely. And you know, we've actually seen that, Gary. We've seen some of our clients literally shipping hardware kits out to their home users. And they, you know, they plug in the enterprise Wi-Fi router rather than whatever one they got from the ISP. And it's controlled by the enterprise. The enterprise knows what it is. They understand the patch levels. They control the configuration. You know, the Wi-Fi settings are good. And it sort of seems excessive, but actually, in many ways, it reduces a lot of friction. And then the other is, of course, this zero trust paradigm, you know, which can use the same engineering, if you like, but move the focus away from the security and the integrity of the tunnel to really asserting the identity of the user and the endpoint, which also, I think, goes a long way to mitigating some of these threats.
Charles, is there anything you'd like to share with our viewers and listeners that we haven't covered today?
No, Gary, I think, you know, I would invite people to visit our site. A lot of what me and my team do is published, you know, significant resources, blog posts, white papers, data analytics, white papers giving guidance. We really have a vision to be a, you know, good citizen in cyberspace, and to help cyberspace, I suppose, be a place where other people can be good citizens too. So I'd say, you know, reach out, have a look at what we're doing, and if you like what you see, then let's have a chat.
That sounds great. So folks, we just had Charles van der Waalt, the global head of cybersecurity research, sitting in our hot seat from orangecyberdefense.com. Easy to spell, Orange and Cyber and Defense, three words, orangecyberdefense.com. White papers, research, analysis, some news we're hearing that your home wireless router or router might need a replacement or a tune-up. And that's great. I mean, that's great to know, because I haven't heard it anywhere else. And it's one of those epiphanies that I'm glad you shared it with our viewers and our listeners, so they can take advantage of this information and maybe get one step ahead of the next threat and partner with you as they need your services, which we probably all do.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.